Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Bichette. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Tuesday, April 26th, 2022. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free on the internet at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and you click on the Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of the book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for almost 18 years to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships, and to turn any negative emotional experience into part of the infallible guidance system that each and every one of us has been given. You can also download the actual worksheet process itself. It's a simple PDF file. Download it, print it off, and copy it as often as you'd like and use it over and over again, absolutely free. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. If you choose to tap on that, it will let you download a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. We hope people do that soon and often because it frequently leads to comments, questions, answers, testimonials, and if you have any of those to share with us, please give us a call at 563-999-3581 and press 1. You can also make use of the archives of the show that have lots of files of people who have called in the show and been stepped through the worksheet process or asked powerful questions about the use of these tools in their lives. And some of those have been curated out. You'll find them on that first page when you click on the Start Here link. And then the rest of them are available just from the archives of the last 11-plus years of this show. If you go to the whyagain.org, whyagain.org website, and click on the picture of the microphone, it will take you to a page where you can get access to all of the files from the last 11-plus years of this show. And that's a powerful resource. I use it myself from time to time, and we encourage people to go back and listen to key shows. There's also the website that was created about 3 years ago, mindshiftersacademy.org. And that was a website I created just to help increase exposure to Dr. Michael Rice's work and the tools that he and Jeannie make available. So you can also find some of the key files of the past 3 years plus of this show that are edited out, and there you can also find the files since the beginning of this year where we're stepping through the Way of Mastery and reading it and doing commentary, and those are available on the MindShiftersAcademy.org webpage. That's also the place you'd go to get information about how to join us on one of our support groups that are done on Tuesday and Thursday night from 6:30 to 9 p.m. Central Time, and they're no payment required for attendance, and all the information you would need to join us is available on that webpage. And there's a separate login information for each day. Tuesday and Thursday are separate key numbers on the Zoom file. So that's kind of the housekeeping stuff for today. I think I mentioned at the end of the show yesterday that tonight in the support group we will listen to the Guy Finley talk that he did on Sunday because of the what I consider fascinating synchronicity between the images and metaphors he was using in his talk and what I have used in various talks throughout the years, including something that came to me to use in teacher training down in Heartland about somewhere between 10 and 12 years ago. And so you can join us tonight for the Tuesday support group and get access to that, or you can just go to Guy Finley's page because, blessedly, ever since the coronavirus restrictions have hit, he has decided to make his talks available absolutely free. So you can go to guyfinley.org/channel, and all you have to do is provide a working email address, and they'll give you free access to the talks he's been doing Sunday, Wednesday, and Friday, and occasionally a Saturday, since the coronavirus restrictions went into effect. So you can take advantage of that. And our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And I'm throwing it open to comments or questions because at the end of yesterday's show, we had finished going through the initial reading of Lesson 9 in the Way of Mastery. So now we've been through the first 9 lessons, and the first 9 lessons have taken us on quite a journey as part of the pathway that they're calling Way of the Heart. The first lesson is rather short and just titled The Way That Calls You Home. And it puts out the first axiom on page 5 that says you don't experience anything that you haven't chosen to experience with where you're focusing your mind energy. The second lesson is titled You Create Your Experience. The third lesson is titled Power of Forgiveness, and in it, it outlines almost exactly the same definition of forgiveness that Dr. Michael Rice has found with the Kabor's manuscript and that he found in The Course in Miracles, where it says, open a curtain in your practice and put away everything you think you want. Your trifling treasures put away and leave a clean and open space for the Christ mind to come. That's one of that's almost verbatim of one of the lessons or one of the readings from the Course in Miracles. And Michael Rice says, oh my gosh, that's exactly the same as cancel your goals whenever you're upset. And that's exactly what the Kabor's manuscript research brought to them. The idea that the word shebag is the word that was translated into something in Greek and then something in Latin and something in English and eventually came down to us as the word forgiveness. But the word shebag in the Aramaic means to cancel or dismantle. And so Michael Rice said, hey, basically the original idea of forgiveness is it's all an inside job and it's to dismantle perceptions that don't need to be there. And that's exactly the definition that's in Lesson 3 of Way of Mastery under the Power of Forgiveness. So is this Susan?
Hi, Dr. Tim. Yep, it is. So one of the things that has had the biggest impact on me isn't directly connected with the way of mastery, although maybe it is, but it's something you said about enlightenment and how I've always had the idea in my mind that enlightenment was some lofty, unattainable, amazing thing where once you've got it forever and you're in a state of bliss forever. And I should have thought to do a worksheet on that because it seemed like totally unattainable and even a deterrent from having the kind of hope that I've been finding I have listening to the Way of Mastery as you read and interpret. So you've said a couple of things over the last couple of weeks. One of them is something like, what do you expect? Somebody who has a realization and a big, an enlightened thing, that you expect to stay in there? No, they don't stay in there. And I've just had these preconceived notions for years. And I'm not calling you to sort of work on that, but just to say that has had a huge impact because I feel as if I am in the running now. I can get there too. So,
yeah,
thanks.
And part of what I was saying that you're reacting to is that this thing that people, you know, call enlightenment is a present moment opening or awareness.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's being awake and aware fully in the moment. It's having the ability to tap into what Michael Rice would call that spiritual faculty of perception, which is not the same kind of distorted perception that our minds create as this kind of cheap knockoff of of actuality. And so, you know, the idea is that in the moment, if I'm fully awake and aware, I can be said to be enlightened in that moment. I have enlightenment. The lights are on. I'm seeing things accurately. And as long as I'm in a body, the message of all of these deep spiritual teachings is I can have my garbage get triggered. And anytime my garbage gets triggered, I'm using the word garbage, Way of Mastery, in one of the lessons says it's the trivialities that have been shoved into the intellect. Whenever mm-hmm. that's triggered, it distorts my perception. I am not in that moment able to access what Michael Rice would call true perception, that spiritual faculty of true perception.
Mm.
So that's the distinction that I was making in one of the talks that you said, oh, my gosh, that meant then it's possible that I might
mm-hmm.
reach enlightenment or I might have moments of enlightenment. And, yes, it's there, as I say in almost every one of the intros, I say that the reality management worksheet can be used by me or anybody else who picks it up to turn any negative emotional experience they have into part of the infallible guidance system that each and every one of us has been given. Now, what that means is when I have a negative emotional state, I could choose to use it as the wake-up call or the alarm bell telling me, Tim, your lights are out. You are in mm-hmm. the process of creating a distorted perception, and you're not seeing life, love, actuality clearly.
Mm.
You're not seeing the flow of life and creation accurately.
Oh. A couple of days ago, Michael suggested I do 5 worksheets a day for the next 40 days, sort of like an Easter exercise. And there were reasons why he said that, and I thought, oh, my God, no. But so far, I've been able to do them by mixing and matching the different worksheets and the methods that I've been using. For instance, I know the worksheet very well, and I know various permutations of it. For instance, the pattern part I have plugged into every worksheet I do. But I go for 2 long walks a day, and the first one is by myself with my grand dog. And I thought, well, this is a great time to do a worksheet, but Michael has advised against not doing them on paper. He says stuff slips away. So I've taken out my iPhone and I talk to myself in the little notes part where you can actually record your voice. And I've got it so that I say, okay, I, Susan, who am love, upset level X, am mad about or sad about or feel guilty about whatever it is, and then name the thing. And then realize what the goal is and talk that into the phone and then go over the very quickly the rose and the butterfly story, which is just a reminder to stay connected to God and then give up the goal, ask to be shown, give up wanting to be right, which is a huge step for me because I'm always right. Every time, practically, I go into a worksheet and I go in thinking I'm right and the other guy is an idiot or whatever it is. And there is always a shift. Sometimes it's a shift into another bad feeling, like going from angry to sad or something else. But anyway, by doing it that way, and I do maybe 2 or 3 on that walk, which is about an hour's walk, then the other 2 I can do. In fact, I found myself in a waiting room, so I took out the little app that Jeannie invented, which is amazing. And I use that, or I use a piece of paper. And when I come home from my walk, I've got notes, which I can correct and fix. You know, usually there's auto-correcting and no punctuation, and it's a mess, but I've got it down. It's like writing down a dream in a notebook in the middle of the night. It's a mess, but you've got it. Using those different methods, doing 5 worksheets a day, even when as busy as I've become again, it's possible. And one of the things that I've learned is pretty much my issues boil down to a couple of things, a couple of childhood scenes. And no matter where I'm starting, it's like the spokes of a wheel on the wheel end, and they go right back to a central issue. And it's amazing how many parts of the wheel are still operating as thorns in the side or incorrect thinking or lack of enlightenment, lack of the presence of love, whatever it is, but they lead back into the central thing. And I feel as if it's sort of never going to end, but what has happened is things shift even outside the realm of the issue I'm finding. Like today I was at the refugee center, and instead of rushing around, being unable to focus when somebody is struggling with English and trying to tell me some very basic thing, meanwhile I'm trying to make coffee for 45 people or whatever it is, there's a calmness, there's a difference. It's physical even. A physical difference in my life by doing these worksheets every day. So I guess that's a testimonial, isn't it?
That is.
But I was telling Michael,
testimonial.
And Michael was bawling me out yesterday. He said, oh, no, you do it verbally. And he sang me the Slip Sliding Away song, which I've heard him sing before. And I thought, wait a minute, there's something missing here because it's not slip sliding. And then I remembered doing the notes. And I told him about the notes, and I was prepared to be bawled out again. And he said, oh, my gosh, that's a good thing to do. That might actually be another dimension in the use of the worksheet. That's using the technology. And he got all worked up about it, and I thought, yay, good. So it's been a fun couple of days. And also, this is another thing that feeds in, or it's a question I have. Michael said, there may come a moment when you suddenly hit the bedrock and you have a huge healing crisis, and there may be tremendous fatigue, or there may be a lot of crying or something. And I'm thinking, so do I have to go through that to get there? And I'm realizing that's my enlightenment expectation again. No, you don't have to do anything. You don't have to expect anything or look for any indication. It'll show up in the way it's going to show up. And even Michael might be wrong about the big catharsis. There may be one, but there may not be. But it's not something to think about or prepare for.
Exactly.
I think I'm done. Okay.
Exactly.
Good.
And the other thing that I would call your attention to is, you know, however, to whatever degree, your words and tone right now indicate to me, as you're talking about Michael, and you were so relieved that he said, oh, I'm doing it right, and whatever, putting him up on a pedestal.
Oh, yeah.
And that is not productive. That is counterproductive, and it's nothing to be upset about. It's simply something to observe. Oh, look what happens when I put somebody on a pedestal, and when I say, I'm going to be so upset if they don't think it's okay for me to do this the way I'm doing it.
Yeah. Good.
Right?
Good
and
point.
And just being aware of that is a reliever of the stress and some of the energy. The next thing, clearly, that we can do, because we can do a worksheet on any activity, any action, any person, any person, place, or thing, past, living, dead, future, etc., all those things that Michael said. You could start to do a worksheet or two. Since you've decided to do five a day, you could do a worksheet or two on this desire you have for Michael to approve of you and or the way you're doing the worksheets, or your negative emotions that come up when you think he's poo-pooing your working through the worksheet with the oral or the verbal, and dismantle some of the energies in you that you're trying to avoid feeling by putting him on a pedestal.
Okay. That's good. Especially
and,
the very
last thing
you said.
Yeah, it's usually the very last thing I say that's so important.
It was all
I say
good,
something
Dr.
brilliant,
Finn.
And then I pause, right? I see this brilliant thing tumbling out of my mouth, and I go, oh, that was good. And then I pause, and people say, oh, that last thing you said. But
good,
the idea
yeah.
is, but if I have a negative emotion when somebody says something and my mind says, oh, I'm feeling badly because they said that, that's a codependent relationship I just created. It's never happened that way. The bad feeling I'm experiencing is coming from the interpretation I am placing on what they said, and its energetic resonance was something I carried with me into this moment.
Yeah.
And my awareness of that can be the guide for my dismantling it, can be the guide for, okay, here's what I would put on the worksheet, here's the emotion I'm feeling, here's the thought I'm using to create it, here's the goal that my mind is saying, I need Michael to approve of me in order for me to feel good about the work I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And yet, at another level, you just said very clearly, hey, Michael doesn't really approve of it, but I'm already feeling better and different physically, mentally, and emotionally from what I've been doing.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's that lived experience of something that goes against the belief system you have operating that says you need the approval of somebody in order for you to feel good about yourself or what you're doing.
Right. And what's happening, too, is that maybe it's partly my age or having done, I will have a trigger, and part of me isn't triggered anymore, but the trigger is triggered. It's like I'm two people, and I'm saying to myself, whoa, look at that trigger, but it seems like a shadow. The impact is like a shadow of it was of what it was, and the issues are still there. For instance, there's this young woman who sings in our choir, and I admire her greatly, and I'd like to be on her radar, and I don't appear to be on her radar. And I feel part of me is watching that and saying, there I go again. There's that thing of wanting someone to like me, whereas it's none of my business how she feels about me, and she has her own issues, and maybe I, you know, maybe I'm very unappealing to her or out of her age range of being interested or whatever it is. Most of me is fine, but I'm just watching it, and I do the worksheets on them. But the urgency of those old issues, it's like somebody has undone 10 knots in the ropes that have been tied around my chest, and the other ones are getting looser and looser and looser, but the issues are still the same.
Yes. So do you understand that what's happening there is you've simply begun to develop what in Way of Mastery they call the witness, what some people call the observer, what Michael Singer would call this position of the seat of your soul that you can step back into and observe your thought process, and what Guy Finley says, you can step back and watch the movement of your thoughts without being moved by your thoughts. So all of these different traditions call it different things, right? The eye behind the eye, the observer, the witness, the observing position, the seat of the soul. What you're experiencing, is probably the way it strikes me, is the result of having practiced this keen embracing observation, right? You're stepping into the process of observation, and it's strengthening that part of you that can view the flow of activity in life around you and the movement of your thoughts from a different perspective. And it's strengthening your realization that you are not your thoughts. There is an awareness. There is a consciousness that is separate from the flow of mind energy that we call thoughts. And that's what the Way of Mastery in the first 9 lessons is trying to point us to over and over and over again. You are far more than your body, than your life experiences, than your thoughts, than your emotional responses. Your essence is consciousness itself. And that essence as consciousness is connected to every other essence and every other piece of consciousness. And so what you were just describing is one of the natural expressions of that work to develop your awareness of your ability to observe things and observe how you are not what you're observing, right? The observer cannot be the same as what is observed. They're interacting.
And what?
Go ahead.
What is amazing is when one part has stepped away from the rest of it, you might, or I might have imagined that what would I be left with? Just a poor, sorry heap of energyless uncertainty or something, but it isn't. It's like when those things are stepped away from, the core self is much more robust and centered and healthy
and strong
and joyful.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
And
it's,
when
it,
the
it,
Way of Mastery,
you know, because,
says,
go ahead. The Way of Mastery says,
I am as God created me. I'm beginning to get the sense of that. And it, it has, it, it was an intellectual exercise before, and I'd say, oh, that's nice. Yeah, I am as God created me. Well, bully for me. But I'm finding that I'm feeling it.
Yeah, and the more you work at feeling it, the more you realize any words you try and put on it don't quite fit the bill. And so that's okay.
No.
It's okay. It's okay to work at experiencing it and not be able to communicate it to other people in words. And yet your life experience and your energetic presentation will be transformed by it.
Years ago, I wrote a chancel opera on the story of Simeon, the old man who waited to see the Messiah. And that's the Feast of the Presentation in the Christian tradition, and I'm sure you know the one I'm talking about. But one of the great things about writing a piece like that is you get to put words in the mouths of the characters. I tried to stay very close, totally close to what the scripture said, but you need a little, I guess they call it midrash. You need something to flesh out the drama of it so it becomes, it can be a play or an opera. And one thing Simeon said was, something to do with how God's voice has always been available to him, but he never realized it because it was so familiar. It was his own intonation. It was his own voice, inflection, his own language, his own accent from his culture, from his era. And it was so familiar that he thought it was his voice, which it was. And I remember a woman in the congregation said, man, you must have had some incredible experience to know that. And I thought to myself, is that so? It's like what you said one time, you said, wow, I should go back and listen to what I just said. That was so brilliant. I never thought of that before. It's as if I knew it back then, but I didn't know it, and I'm beginning to know it now,
deeper,
and maybe I'll
love.
Laugh at it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right.
And so what's happened as a result of these worksheets is I start talking to myself from God's point of view, but it seems overblown to say it's God. But it's the wisdom. It's the knowing of the truth instantly. As soon as the trigger sets, boom, I know I'm triggered. And it happens very fast. What's the goal? Okay, God, tell me what to do. And the answers are so simple, really, and so basic. It has to do with allowing and observing and loving and making your circle of acceptance of other people and situations wider and wider and wider until the boundaries, I hope, will disappear altogether. There will be no, there'll only be the core stuff. But
okay, but even if they don't, you're already in the moment saying, wow, this is something I prefer to the negativistic judgmental thought patterns I've been engaged in.
Yeah.
Right? So even if it doesn't reach that idealized point you have that there are no boundaries or that it fits that hope that you have for that final enlightenment or whatever, even if it doesn't reach that, it's still beneficial. You still prefer the results you're getting when you're in that observational process.
Yeah, by far.
Right? So you can catch the words and thoughts there and say, oh, I'm hoping for some kind of an outcome. Let me cancel that goal.
Yeah.
Right?
That's
because
good.
If I'm hoping for something other than what this pulls me into the thought about what Guy Finley says about all these people learning to manifest this and that. He says, I'll tell you what. I will give you something worth manifesting. It's very different than the Mercedes you want or the relationship you want or the the career you want. I will give you something to manifest. And he does his whole talk. He says, at the end of it, I'll give you something different to manifest. And he talks about all the problems with manifesting. And at the end of it, he says, so here's the new thing to try and manifest. Manifest a way of being completely happy with what you have in this very moment.
Excellent, excellent, excellent.
And when you say, oh, I hope someday I'll reach the point where you are not happy, you are not fully happy in the moment. And so cancel that goal and see what the dissatisfaction is in you that says, hey, this miracle of life that I've been given, this power of consciousness, this power of conscious co-creation, which is my mind energy, and wherever I focus it, I get more of what I focus it upon, this body that I have, the breath that's moving through me, the heart, whatever it is not enough. That dissatisfaction in me is worth dismantling, is worth questioning, is worth stepping into to say, oh, there's something in this moment. Here's another Guy Finley line that comes to me from time to time. He says, how about you decide to take a look at everything that occurs in your life that you don't like? Because we have this process of judging. We've been conditioned into it, and judgment and negativity and evaluating and competition. He says, how about you step into this process and you recognize that it's possible for you to choose, you don't have to, but you could choose this interpretation and put it on every event and every moment in your life you don't like. And here's the interpretation you could choose. This is life asking me, hey, Tim, how would you like to understand what it is in you that's keeping you from knowing me and loving me more fully? It's happening right now. It's coming up in you right now because you don't want this and you don't want that and you think this is better and you think that is worse. And every event, every moment that arises in my life that I step back from, I try to pull myself out of, I try to see myself as separate from, I try to judge myself, what if I stepped into the interpretation in that moment of, oh, here is life trying to tell me, hey, Tim, how would you like to find out what is keeping you from knowing me and loving me more fully? Because if you say, yes, you'd like to know, take a look at what you're doing with your thoughts right now, because that's it.
So good. That's great.
Here is this miracle of life that has been given to every sentient being on the planet. And it's only us as sentient beings that we say have the capacity to step back and judge it as bad or wrong or not enough. And here's a guy like Roger McGowan on death row in Texas for 20-some years for something he didn't do, and he decides to look at that and say, I am blessed, and life is a gift, and every moment in life is an opportunity to learn, and love is the easy role to play. Hate is the hard role. And, oh, my gosh, if he can do it in that situation, what do I think is blocking me from doing it when the coffee grounds spill or when somebody doesn't show up for an appointment that I had really hoped them to be at, or when I have to, you know, get a deposition from an attorney for something that they're going to try and make me trip over my words and then deny my patient some insurance benefits if I misstep. And how am I creating that tension that pulls me away from just experiencing the glory of the gift of existence, of life that I've been given in the moment?
Fantastic.
And in every moment of resistance, there is the opportunity to discover what is keeping me from knowing and loving the gift of life more fully. That's from Guy Finley.
Well, what do we say now?
Nothing. We don't have to say anything. We can just take a breath. And I was just thinking, I'm going to go back and listen to your testimonial from earlier in the call, because, you know, you said something, I can't recall the words right now, but you said something about how the active application of the reality management worksheet, even in your verbal note-taking of it, as you are mm-hmm. on your walk, is resulting in physical changes that you prefer.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I forget exactly
what
you said.
Well, I didn't say
prefer,
but yeah. Oh, good. Well, yeah, it's like a healing for the whole being, body, and everything else. Yeah. So, Dr. Tim, on another note totally, I was listening yesterday to the entire show, and toward the end you invited comments and sailed through very nicely because nobody pressed one. For me to be able to change gears into talking, interacting mode after having been, I feel as if it's like getting a blood transfusion or something. I couldn't possibly have talked. And I don't know if others feel that way, but I just wanted to say you handle it very well, because if nobody calls in, you have other things you can say and you take it right through to the end. But it's like changing gears, and the gear change feels difficult after such a long session of listening and sort of drinking in. I mean, we're just here drinking it all in, and I wish others would say something about that, but in any way, for me, it's sometimes hard to change gears.
Well, that's perfectly all right. That's why when I do it, I try to be ready to just keep talking if nobody raises a hand, because it's this work for me, the way of mastery for me, is a set of teachings, a set of invitations, a set of observations, a set of tools that has been life-transforming. And it's woven into the Course in Miracles work, the Michael Rice work, the Guy Finley work, the Dale Allen Hoffman work. It's woven into all of those for me. And it doesn't do that for everybody. I mean, I'm fully aware that there is a personal preference, there is a stylistic, you know, synchronicity or whatever, that makes this Way of Mastery tool one of my favorites. And it's certainly not the only way. It's certainly not exactly. It's basically what happened with Diedrich Wolzak when he read The Course in Miracles, and he figured out, or it just came to him and it just flowed from him, to change his life in such a way that within a year's time he had become a full-time therapist, and he'd no training in therapy. But, you know, it was like this alchemical change in him that came from his working with The Course in Miracles. Well, that's pretty much what's happened with me with the Way of Mastery. And I hold no illusions about the fact that everybody's going to find the same messages and the same beauty and the same depth in that work. So I'm just responding to the request because it resonates so well with me and making it available for people. And if it works for them, great. If not, that's okay too. And when I throw it open at the end of a segment or at the end of a show and say, inviting comments and questions, it's also okay if nobody has any, because that's just the flow of the energy in that moment.
It's very interesting that you say that this Way of Mastery is sort of built on a foundation of other, like The Course in Miracles and Dale Allen Hoffman and Michael Rice's work and everything, because I feel that way too. It's like those things got my mind ready to be able to hear this. and hear it and hear it and hear it. And even I'm hearing new things every time I hear it. So it's like it's a different book, and it's building on itself, and it's a phenomenon. You know, in the New York Times today, they were talking about how the length of the second, 60 seconds in a minute, the length of the second is actually not accurate. They haven't been accurate. And the second is actually not either as long, or it's a little longer than the second we knew about. And I haven't read the article, but I'm thinking this is the same sort of thing. And I don't know how to put those together now that I've gotten that far in what I'm saying, but
It brings me to think about what we've been doing in the Thursday support group the last two Thursdays, is we were watching the first 2 hours of the Mayan calendar video, which talks about time. And you might thoroughly enjoy that. It's available on their website. It used to be anyway. I'm pretty sure you can find a free copy of it. And, you know, people think about, oh, a Mayan calendar video, it's going to be about doom and gloom and the end of the world. And that's not what this is about. This is about consciousness. This is about the energy of consciousness. This is about us as conscious co-creators. And there are so many overlaps between that lecture that Ian Shell Lunghold was giving, I think it was only a year or two before he died, and the work that Dr. Michael Rice presents about the understanding of how your conscious logical mind, you know, Michael Rice would call it your carbon-based memory, the brain in your head, how limited it is in its processing compared to your consciousness. And consciousness is capable of comprehending far more than your brain can process. And he talks about, in the lecture, he talks about your experience of time, and it might seem like time is speeding up, but time isn't really speeding up. What he says in the lecture is creation is speeding up. And he talks about how we're on a schedule. And he talks about from this bigger perspective that the Mayan calendar, he was basically talking about the 13.84 billion years or the 14 billion years, whatever it is, that our scientists, when they first found the Mayan calendar and they got some translations of that rubbing of that stone, they thought, well, this is nuts because, you know, that's not accurate. Our universe is only this many years old. And what Ian says in the lecture is that the more our science progresses, the more it's expanding its estimate of how long ago the Big Bang was and how long the universe has been, the physical universe has been in existence and expanding. And he says, at one point he says, what do you want to bet that by the time our hard science is done with this, they're going to come up and say it's almost exactly the same as what these Mayans put in this calendar all those years ago. And you know, the absurdity is that our scientists think that the Mayans were primitive compared to them, so they couldn't possibly know. Right? They couldn't possibly know about the Big Bang or about how long the universe has been in existence or how it's expanding or whatever. And yet the arrogance of our scientists was literally blinding them to evidence that would indicate that the Mayans were far more sophisticated and understood far more than our scientists would give them credit for. You know, one of the examples is that, you know, the Mayans had a calendar that was only 360 days. And our scientists looked at that and said, these people are so primitive, they don't even understand that a year is not 360 days, but it's 365 and a quarter days. Right? And that what those scientists didn't understand is that the Mayans also had a calendar that was 260 days, And they had another calendar that was 365 and a quarter days, but that calendar was only used for collecting taxes because they understood it was only measuring the movement of a physical object in the universe around another physical object in the universe. And that was pedantic for them. That was so, you know, ridiculously common that they only used it for the collecting of taxes because they lived in a culture where you had to collect taxes. And the farmers in the agriculture knew, okay, here's when this happens. But these other two calendars, a 260-day calendar and a 360-day calendar that they had set up, interacted like cogs, wheels in a cog, and so as one turned, it would turn the other in the opposite direction. And when the specific cogs lined up in that, I think it was 52 years or whatever it was, once every 52 years, it was such an important time for the alignment of these two energies that this calendar was marking that every debt in the nation was forgiven and all fires were put out before the end of the day, and they were out for a 12 or 24-hour period, and they were relit the next morning from the temple fire. It was so important to them to mark this time in a calendar that was not about a physical movement of one body around another. They were other energies. They were personal energies. They were universal creative energies. They were Lord knows what, right? These other energetic flows that weren't just limited to the physical body. And our scientists had no way of comprehending that and didn't even know that the Mayans had another calendar that was exactly the same number of days as their calendar, but it wasn't important to their culture except for collecting taxes. So it's our arrogance that blinds us many times. So that's just a couple things that are in that lecture that might, you know, whet your appetite for looking into it and see if you can find a free copy and watch it on the internet or whatever. It's a fascinating, mind-expanding exercise. And that's the kind of feedback I've gotten every time I've showed it in the group over the years. And the website to go check that out is Mayan, M-A-Y-A-N, Magix, M-A-J-I-X.com. I'm typing it in to make sure that it's the right address I'm giving out. Yeah, Mayan Magix, M-A-Y-A-N. MAJIX.com.
Okay, great.
There's a codex there that, you know, you can like look up on each day what today's energy is, and you can look up what your birthday is and what your sign is. So it's like another form of astrology based on the Mayan calendar energy.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Yeah. All right. Well, I'm finished with talking, I think.
All right. Blessings. Thank you so much for that question. And I will, right here at the end of things, two other people have put their hand up. So I think we have Celinda. Is that Celinda?
Yeah. Yes, you do. Yes, you do, Dr. Kim. Thank you very much. Your conversation and Susan's questions and input are spot on for me. I just feel like I'm unfolding myself. Before I say anything else, I was wondering, I would really like to see this video. Could you give me a little more possible ways to language it to possibly bring up the free showing of it?
Well, go to Mayan Magix, M-A-Y-A-N, MAJIX.com.
Okay. All right. And I thought when I was listening to you talk that that was just written comments about the Mayan calendar and, like you said, an alternative.
This is the website that was created by the person who gave the talk. He died a year or two later, but Ian, I-A-N, Shell, X-E-L, Lunghold, L-U-N-G-O-L-D.
Ian, what was it? Shell?
I-A-N is his first name.
Right.
And then his middle name is X-E-L.
X-E-L, okay.
And then his last name is L-U-N-G-O-L-D. And the name of the video, Gold, and the name of the video is The Condor Flies to the Eagle.
Okay, that's perfect. Thank you.
And it's about a three-hour video.
Okay.
And if you go to YouTube and type that in, when I did that just now, it pops up. The top one at the top is the full three-hour video that you can watch there on YouTube. The Condor Flies to the Eagle, - Mayan Calendar Comes North, and then there it is.
Perfect. Now, as you and Susan were interchanging in this delightful conversation that you had today for me, I had a perspective, or I had an insight about the Buddhist expression that man is between heaven and earth, like he's got one foot in heaven or his head in heaven, or one foot in heaven and one foot on earth. I think it's the way it is. And I realized that is part of the three honors I believe I mentioned the other day. And I mentioned that I'm coming into my own acceptance of the uniqueness of my form in this dimension, in this lifetime. And I also had a perception of balance, and that my journey in relation to the three honors, excuse me one second, my relationship was to bring them into balance. And so I've been, as I mentioned to you on another time, I have been beginning to stand up for my perceptions, realizing they can be in total error, but standing up and allowing them to exist along with my journey, my process of unfolding more and more truth in my life and less judgment. And so I was delighted in what you and Susan were speaking about, partially because I also had the vision of the time on Kauai in 1978, 1980, when I mentioned to you, I took Jesus off the cross, and I realized that he co-created that. And so I was especially, through his own process of unfolding, and he had a lot of resistance, and he had a lot of judgment, and his unfolding process of moment-by-moment enlightenment until my perception, thanks to what Michael said, when he got on the cross, of all of a sudden, my God, this is what I was born for. And I realized that he got the whole enchilada on that moment in the cross, which I can imagine. Now, this is all metaphorical, and this is all my process of unfolding when he looked with love into the soldier's eyes that the Way of Mastery mentioned. And he realized in that moment, as did the soldier when he dropped the hammer, and that was the process of my coming to realize, oh my God, Yeshua really is my brother. And I took him off of the pedestal. And that equalization process has been continuing for me ever since. In fact, I was I was a little feisty with Michael on one of the programs, and I bless his heart. He just was right there for me. And I said, no, you know, your perception doesn't work for me. And it wasn't that I was avoiding him or throwing him away or putting him up or putting him down. It's just like, hey, brother, I'm just going to share with you what I feel. And I don't want another interpretation laid over me at the same time that I accept the possibility that that interpretation is totally valid. Does that make any sense?
Yes, it does. And you've taken us to the end of our time, so I will thank you. And I will remind us all that we come from love. We're made of the stuff we call love. We actually are love. And I'll welcome Jeannie Rice and let you know that, Jeannie, we did not get to area code 760 yet. But
okay.
There you
Very
go.
Good.
And have a wonderful show.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you,
it.
Susan. Thank you, Celinda.
So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio. Today is Tuesday, April the 26th, 2022. And our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And press 1, and that puts you into queue to talk to us. And we'd love to hear your comments and your questions because that makes this your show. Just a minute to get dialed in, and then I'll go to area code 760. In the meantime, I'll invite you to go to our website, www.whyagain.org, and look around. I made some changes this morning. I added a new section up in the multimedia that is news and then newsletters, so you can click and look at any of the past newsletters if you didn't get them. And if you're not on our mailing list, if you've not been getting our newsletters, if you scroll to the bottom of the page when you click on whyagain.org, there is a section that says get in touch or add me to your mailing list, join your mailing list, and it's a glowing heart at the very bottom. So if you click on that and give us your information, then you'll get our newsletters. They aren't every month. I've only sent 2 out so far this year, and we're already in the 4th month. I'm getting ready to send out another one here in a day or two, so be sure and get your name on our mailing list if you want to receive those newsletters. I also added some things under the section healing. There is, and then under healing the body, mind, spirit, there's a section on nourishment. There were several questions yesterday about different foods and things like that. And so now I've got a section out there, and it's what are you eating? And it's got a lot of information. I put out the God's Pharmacy, which is what we referred to yesterday, that food is like a sign of nature, that if, like, you cut a carrot, it looks like an eyeball inside. So that tells you that carrots are good for your eyes. And like Michael mentioned yesterday, the avocado, when you cut it open, it looks like a womb. And then I also put a section out there about the cucumber. So there's some new information. You can also go down and click at the bottom of the page. There's a section that says news. That's also up at the top under multimedia news. And so I click, I put all kinds of new stuff out there. So look around. And if you see something that isn't out there and you'd like to see it, let us know. Michael, we already have a hand up, but I want to welcome you to the show.
Well, thank you, dear heart, and let's talk to whoever's hand is up. That's awesome.
Okay. It's 760. I believe that this is Ann. Welcome.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you.
Hey, young lady, we haven't heard your voice in a while. Welcome.
Thank you. I was actually waiting in line to comment with Dr. Kim's hour. However, it's okay. Can you tell Jeannie if Susan's still on?
Yes, she is.
Okay.
And I'll turn
well,
her mic
okay.
back on
just,
if you would like to talk with her.
Yeah,
so
well, I just wanted
noted.
To share. Hey there, lady. No, it was just great to hear your revelations, I'm going to call them, and how different you were coming across than in the past. And it's just like, I know I appreciate when people say something to me because I don't see my improvements sometimes, and you're starting to be aware of them, and that's just awesome because in that whole show, I don't recall anything negative, and that's where you used to be. And I just wanted to share that, you know, how I agree with Dr. Tim made some comments about, you know, he could hear the energy, the difference in your tone, voice, whatever, however he put it, and I agree. And it's just exciting. So it brought up joy in me. It triggered joy in me. So anyway, I just wanted to share that with you.
Thanks, Ann. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, anyway, and it's fun to, now it's fun to listen to that. It's like, and we as people, like when you mentioned, you know, writing an opera, it's like, oh my goodness, right? And I mean, and I knew you had the musical background, and it's like sometimes we, when in our gifts, we take them for granted, and then somebody like me comes along who's, you know, who's picking at the piano, and I'm getting there, but still picking at it, and we hear that somebody's written an opera, and as you describe it, we're going, oh my gosh, and then we realize, oh, but wait, she has some of these struggles too, and she's coming along, and she's healing them. It's like, oh my goodness, so I can do the same thing, you know, with my gifts. Anyway, it's just a great reflection, and I love the community that we can learn from each other, not just our teachers. Anyway, blessings, dear.
Mm.
Yay.
Right. Thanks, Ann.
Yes, you're welcome and deserving. And so then, Michael, what I was going to share, Dr. Tim yesterday was doing, it was on lesson 9 in the Way of the Heart, and I was driving, and it had to do with sitting in a chair and just taking in whatever, you just coming into peace and just, and I go, okay, I'm driving. I'm on my way to a massage, which was great. And I was running a little bit behind, but I'd already texted my massage therapist. And I go, okay, first of all, I'm going to practice getting rid of the anxiousness. And I did, because there was no point. You know, I already let her know. And so there's traffic. And at one point, anyway, I'm in this peace state. Just driving along, but, you know, still being aware, because clearly I don't want to close my eyes. but it was wonderful. And at some point, the sky pulled in front. There was a tour bus in the right lane, and there was a dually truck in front of me in the left lane. We were in the left lane. And all of a sudden, this person in a vehicle had pulled out in front of both of those. And I was out, I was in this state, and so I just had this observation and was aware, and there was no anxiousness about, oh my gosh, you know, look what just happened. I was just able, because of the state I was able to observe, oh, my goodness, look at that. And then be grateful that the dually in front of me, since it was the second lane, you know, that this guy passed just barely in front of, nobody put on any brakes, or at least the dually in front of me didn't put on any brakes. And so I go, wow. I just observed it. And it's like, you know, it was great that I was listening to the show at that point, because when I left my house, I was in a state less than love, because of the way my morning had went, and it was my own doing. But just...
Can I break in?
That state. So...
Can I break
yes,
in?
Go ahead. I'm complete anyway. Go ahead.
So my offering is you weren't in that state because of the way your morning was.
Oh, yes, yes. Thank you.
You're in that state because of what's inside of you, that the way the
yes.
morning went brought up for you. And so just, and I was thinking about heading with the show today mm-hmm. in the direction of refining denial again, or reinforcing the whole idea of denial and remembering our definition. When I think or speak,
mm-hmm.
as though something outside of me is the cause or something inside of me. I'm in denial. And that's a place where you want to practice this ability to observe, to become the thinker apart from the thought, the feeler apart from the feelings, the actor apart from the actions, and just watch your mind as it feeds its denial. And if you are the observer of it, you catch it and you go, ah, so now there's a part of my mind that I've been hiding from myself with this act of denial. And what was my act of denial? I had a bad morning because of the way my morning went.
Yeah.
No. I felt this way because of the way, no, it wasn't because of the way my morning went, because that's what's in me. And life is designed to show us, you know, it's like, it's here to kick us right square in the limitation and show us what our next piece of work is continuously.
Yes, yeah. And that's what I like about sharing. And Susan was wondering that earlier when, you know, she had been talking with you, is that when we share, and I think that's the whole point about sharing. And when I share with other friends, you know, ideas come that wouldn't come, say, on my own. And when you share with someone, it's like you're hearing that out loud and, oh, look. So when we share, get all excited, and we've had this one piece, and yet we still have those pieces of denial in there, and they come out, and you are able to pick them up, which is just awesome. So, you know, the process and the learning continues. Yes, thank you. Anyway, it's so great. I mean, I can start to laugh now. I mean, I laughed at that guy. I mean, after I observed that, I go, okay. All right, that was just like it says in the way I master. It was a non-event. I mean, it just was a neutral event. Okay, I'm driving on. But thank you. Thanks for.
And it'll all go to the next level when you can see an event like that, and you just send a blessing and gee, I hope you're safe. Get home safely.
Yes. Yes.
And that's powerful. That you know you've cultivated your relationship with love so deeply that you were able to come from that disturbed state when you left the house and move into this connected space. And, you know, the whole idea of the work is that's where we're designed to live, 24/7, 365. And the purpose of life is to kick us in limitation and show us what we're holding on to.
Yes.
And it plays its role so well, doesn't it?
Yes, and that it's okay, that we're still okay when that comes up. We just deal with it and let it go until our next piece comes up. And so now my shift is, even though, yeah, I get in those states, and it's like Dr. Tim had a great example of when he was listening to a show, and Susan might be able to help me with the details of this, but where, you know, it's this great place that they have, it's a retreat and everything, and then all of a sudden, in an instant, she switched and was downplaying, you know, somebody else, and Dr. Tim was able to, I can't remember how he communicated it to her, and the lady was thanked him for reminding her, oh, yeah, you know, she got out of her state of love just, you know, in an instant, but then she got right back in. So that it's okay that we still have those things in us that get triggered, but we're learning to deal with them because we have the tools. And anyway, it's exciting. So thanks for being on the journey with me and the rest of the community, Susan. Have a blessed day. And you too, sir.
Appreciate you and the whole community. We're definitely blessed. So, Miss Susan, what's on your agenda for today? Any thoughts for us?
Oh, well, I'm doing my worksheets. I actually overshot and did 6. So
whoa, we're going to have to tie working. You down.
Yeah, and it's having global effects on all levels, physical too, physical health and well-being and vitality. And I'm telling you, doing those worksheets, I'm glad you chomped on my ankles. And so I'm going to chomp on everybody else's on this radio show and just say, the smallest thing can be a worksheet that leads to the main stuff, and it's like untying a million tiny knots that have kept, well, I should speak for myself, just kept me held down and under wraps. I can just feel everything loosening up. Air coming
in. So it kept you tied down?
It did, Michael.
it is. Something. Oh, I see. Okay. I didn't know that was possible. I have to look into that. I thought it would be, if you were tied down, it would have been you that tied you down.
Yes. Yep.
Any possibility that you use those things to keep yourself tied down?
Oh,
another worksheet.
Yep. Okay. Well, I don't have much to say except that it's going. So thank you.
That's awesome. You know, that insight, that little phrase of Shakespeare, where he says, "My words fly up, my thoughts remain below." To me, that's his invitation to recognize that our words are continuously telling us about our own unconscious minds, if we'll listen to them. And if we think our words are about somebody else, then we're in projection communication. You know, like, this structure in my mind belongs to you. You did it to me. As opposed to, oh, I have a construct in my mind. Oh, my God. What's happening inside of me is happening inside of me. And when my words indicate I believe otherwise, there's, you know, it's just a beautiful reminder. And the next piece of work to be done. So,
yeah.
Pretty sweet. Pretty awesome. So congratulations. That's fabulous.
Well, thanks a lot.
All right.
Yep.
Holding your day is blessed.
Thanks.
All right. Appreciate you. Bye-bye. So how's everyone else doing? What's happening in your world? Has this conversation triggered anything for you? How can we support you? What's on your mind? Our call-in number, if you're on one of those stations where we can't see you, is 563-999-3581. If we can't see you on our control panel, you can't speak to us, but if you call that number, you'll be listening to the show directly. And then if you push 1, you will be listening to the show. We appreciate the opportunity to extend this teaching, ultimately in the practice of getting ready for it to be available to quite literally every mind, heart, and being on the planet. And each one that participates, each one that asks their question, gives an opportunity to refine another piece of the puzzle for us, so that when we run across someone else who has that piece of the puzzle puzzling them, we can support them in undoing it. So if you're out there in listener land and you have a thought or a question for us, push 1 and let's have a conversation about it. If you call that number, you're listening to the show directly on your phone, push 1, raise his hand in the control panel, and here we are getting to chat. We're experiencing really nice drizzly day today. Perfect timing. We just got most of the garden planted yesterday. And so this rain is just perfect. And it's a little bit on the cool side with all the newly planted plants. It's gentle on them. Nice, sweet, gentle rain. Appreciation for that. And encourage everybody to look at what you need to you know, even if you just do a 4-foot square garden, the amount of food you can grow in it is amazing. And, you know, the more you take control of your own food supply, the more you know what you're putting in your body and what's nourishing you. And when you look at what the culture sells as food, some of it's pretty tragic. And so just an invitation, you know, if you're going to be holy, Holy's got nothing to do with being down on your knees with your hands full. It means whole. It means working on every level. I, for one, am really appreciating the fact that, you know, in my whole life I've never gardened before, that now I'm getting my hands in the earth and getting to learn about soil and building soil and putting this little hole in the ground and dropping a little round thing in it, and wealth comes out of it, you know? I mean, we couldn't even start to buy the greens that are coming to our garden in any market anywhere near here. We couldn't even start to buy them. And the nutrition, you know, we go to the grocery store and you buy a head of romaine and it's about 50% white because it hasn't been grown in soil that's vital, hasn't been left in the ground long enough and handled properly. White transparent lettuce is almost kind of like saying there's nothing in here. So we go out and buy or cut a few romaine leaves. There's not a spot of white on the romaine. The whole leaf is this dark green. And what a blessing to do that. And it's simple. It's easy. It doesn't have to take a lot of work. In fact, we've started a bunch of seeds in a small device that's hydroponic. We can start a dozen or so plants in it, and gee, within a week, cucumber leaves are 4 inches in diameter, and you know they're just rocking. And it's just so easy to do. So I encourage you to consider when people say, "Oh, I'm too busy." Go busyness, let go of that game. That's one of the most common drugs on the planet is busyness. Give yourself time to take care of yourself, to feed yourself properly, and make that part of your life's job, or part of the work that you do in your world. Working for your own nutrition is a whole lot better than working for money. So a few thoughts
plus
in that
you get
regard.
And
if you're
and sunshine.
Well, that, and you also get to connect with what are called SBOs, soil-based organisms. And the energetic pattern and literally the gases that come from the roots, the interaction of the microbes in the soil and the air and the water and the nutrients, all of that feeds and is all part of the healing process. And so I invite you to look into that. Look into the way that you eat. I was talking to a gentleman last week who's done, oh, I don't know, over the years, 3 or 4 intensives. And he finally picked up on, gee, it's time for me to change my nutrition. Got a copy of the Rossaby's book, and making smoothies and, you know, shifting and changing his whole dietary management, realizing how important a component that is in the care of this energy system we call the body-mind unit. So we invite you to participate in deeper ways in every aspect of your life. Pardon me. And in particular, that of doing your work, the work of forgiveness, the work of healing, literally owning and facing every untoward thought, every untoward energy that comes up, that surfaces, owning it, moving through it. Recognizing that forgiveness is a tool for uncovering the things we've hidden from ourselves, the things that we have been in a generational habit of hiding for perhaps 1,000 generations. And as you open those hidden parts of your mind, all kinds of squirrely things can show up. And the objective here is to heal anything that is less than love, to let go of the tendency to blame, and to stop stating in a way that the constructs of your mind are caused by someone else. The only reason they can come forward is because they're there. There's a story we read back some time ago about the fellow who's sitting having a cup of tea and somebody bumps his arm and he spills the tea all over the place and says, oh, look at you, made me spill the tea. Well, no, actually, I bumped your arm. If the cup had been filled with orange juice would have spilled out. And when you realize that when life squeezes you, whatever's in you starts to come out. It's like a toothpaste tube. If what comes out is hostility and fear, then you know that you're from a bloodline of people who've lived in hostility and fear. The language, the habits, the structures, the methods of dealing with things, the goals, are all part of what creates the condition of inside of you that causes certain things to come out of your mind. And if you language how those things are, you made me mad, then you hide on a deeper level and dissociate from your madness, your anger. You anesthetize yourself on a deeper level and hide your pain at still a deeper level. And if you do that, then your pain becomes a more deeply embedded dis-ease energy within your tissue structure. When you reverse that, if somebody comes along and squeezes you, what comes out could be beauty and sweetness and compassion, understanding, as Anne was sharing with us. If you listen to the way she said he, the guy driving the car that jumped out in front, you can see there was a potential for something to be squeezed out of her in that tone. And what she did was to control of her own mind and chose to stay connected to love. And that's such a beautiful and powerful example, especially, you know, if you listen to the recording, the way you said he, you might have had another name in mind for him, which for me indicated there might be a worksheet there just the same. You were able to override it, but at the same time, you might look at doing a worksheet on him and what happened there. And you might find another level of your mind that holds some judgments. But I think it's just profoundly powerful for you to be in such a state of self-observation that you chose to stay connected to love instead of fall into something less than love. It's awesome. And blame is probably one of the most important worksheets that anybody will ever do. Because, of course, when we're playing that blame game, when we're playing the game of somebody else is the reason this is happening, we're literally hiding the content of our own minds from ourselves. Profound, profound difference in the way life unfolds. And there was a term for the state and that you achieved coming out of your house in a state of disturbance, having this fellow trigger some things with the way he drove, and staying connected to love, and staying connected to that serenity. And they talked about it as serenity that passes all understanding. They normally pronounce that as peace. They say Yeshua said, my peace I leave with you, my peace I give to you. It's actually serenity in Aramaic. And that we can maintain our serenity, whatever's happening around us, instead of going to hostility and fear. Mind stays healthier, body stays healthier, relationships stay healthier, finances do better. Everything tends to move in an upward direction when we stay connected to that state of active love. Can't happen when we're in the blame game. In fact, if there's someone that you blame, you might do a mind shifter around your appreciation for the people that you blame. You know, there's somebody that's regularly on the tip of your tongue is there to blame. take their name, Hortense. Okay. So I really deeply appreciate Hortense every time she does something to bring up my aggravation. Now, of course, the mind is going to say BS to that. Are you kidding me? I get angry with her. She's such a whatever's about to come out of your mouth. You write that on the right side of the page when you do a mind shifter. Remember, you divide the page in two. On the left-hand side, you write the mind shifter. Then write everything that comes up in response to it and work through what's moving in you. Profound, profound difference in your world and in your life. And we're about the halfway point in the show.
And we have a hand up.
Awesome. Let's say hello.
It is Miss Belinda, 501. You're on the air.
Yes, it is.
Welcome, young lady.
The rescuer of worms on this drizzly morning.
Is that what you've been doing this morning, capturing the worms and putting them back?
Well, there was a big fat earthworm, and so I'm going to relocate him to my garden, or her, or it.
Cool. Cool.
And
We're getting a nice drizzle too, and a couple of worm farms right in our garden. And when we first started this new garden last year, we couldn't find a worm for love nor money. We've now got it's about a 15 by 15 space.
Uh-huh.
We can't dig 2 inches in any direction without having two or three worms pop out everywhere. I mean, it's just awesome. This little worm farm has really done well. You can create one so easily.
Oh, how do you do that?
You can create a worm. Oh, just very easily. Go to a pastry shop, and they go through dozens and dozens of 1 gallon, 2 gallon, or 3 gallon plastic buckets. Take the plastic bucket, drill holes everywhere around in it with about maybe a 3/8 drill or a little larger. So just holes. So the bucket stays intact, but holes everywhere. And then dig a hole in the ground so that the lid of the bucket is just above the ground. And the bucket drops down inside. And then seed some worms in there. And every day, or, you know, collect all your food scraps and just drop them in that bucket.
Uh-huh.
The worms can move in and out of the bucket at will. You've got your fresh food going in, so it's creating, compost from the worms, worm castings, and the worms just love it. And I mean, we've got in this main new garden, we've now got 3 sections. We've got one bucket like what I'm talking about, and then we've got this little worm farm called a subcomposter.
Anyway.
Subpod, that's it, subpod. And, I mean, literally, it's now populated with, I mean, I don't know how to take population count, but literally every time we dig, Jeannie was putting a plant, she said, get out of the way, move over, worms, move over. They're just, I mean, the ground is just filled with them. Pretty cool.
Right. And now, did you buy red wrigglers to get in there or what?
Yes.
Or did you just let your garden worms come in?
No, we seeded each of them with some red wrigglers. And we bought them from a place, if I remember correctly, we bought them from a couple of different places. And the most active and the best reproducing were from a place called Uncle Ben's Worm Farm. We spent money 2 or 3 times on worms at different places, and when we got his worms compared to the others, they just seemed to, I don't know, you know, I guess it's his only business, and he's learned how to really grow them vital and keep them in good shape, so when he ships them, they're ready to rock, and they've been rocking. I mean, we have 2 garden spaces now, one 8 by 12 and one that's about 15 by 15, and they are just jammed with worms.
That sounds interesting. I'll do some more research on that. One's by 15 by 15. I was just curious how big your garden was. Yay. 8 by 12 and 15 by 15, you said. Well, I just wanted to say that I'm right in there with you. And I went to the store the other day, yesterday, I believe it was, to buy some kale, because since we're in a motorhome and it's just now beginning to be gardening season, there's not much in the garden. There is salad burnet, which I highly recommend. That will bring magnesium to your soil if you have clay soils. And it's also a little perennial, and its little leaves are supposed to taste like cucumber. I understand somewhat stronger. I have it growing in my garden, and I'm not sure it tastes like cucumber to me, but people put it in their salads. And I think I went to the store anyway, and the last time I had bought kale, it was $3.49, and when I went to buy it this time, it was $4.99 a bunch. So I said, I think something is telling me it is time to get really serious about my gardening.
I think you're right on track. Absolutely. I'm with you on that. And I just sent you, it's actually Uncle Jim's worm farm. And I just forwarded
okay.
you, they've got a sale going on, so I just forwarded you an email from them.
Okay, I'll check it out. Also, I was just surfing YouTube a little bit, not that I like to get on the computer, but it just was circumstantial. I was listening to a Dr. Mercola, or reading a Dr. Mercola article, and he had a link, and I listened to the link that he had, and then I went, the next one showed up, and it was, I think she was an Aussie lady who does this no-till gardening, and she has kind of a twist on it a little bit. She said she's been doing it for 20-some years, and it's only about 17 minutes long. I'll be glad to send you the link if you're interested. And apparently, she has a whole series of permaculture classes that she gives for free.
Please do. Yeah, please send it. We'd love to have it. We're learning a lot, and we're doing no-till. We haven't done any tilling at all. Well, we tilled for our potatoes because we planted them in February. In fact, our potatoes are up and rocking already. They've broken through the ground, and they're just beautiful, bright green. But we did till and dug down about 12 inches to plant our potatoes in February. And, you know, with the earth being warm down there all the time, they developed and grew. And I mean, literally, about the day where we had what at least so far appears to be our last frost, the first potato came through, and now we've got about, what, maybe 10 or 12 of them through, Jeannie. So
when was
but
that
we
last
did
frost
tell for that, but other just a week ago.
Okay. I'm using
but that's the only place we've tilled was to put to dig in. Say again.
I said I wanted them for comparison to see how that my garden, what the differences were and the length of the season and things like that. Yeah, cool.
Where are you
yeah,
at with
so
frosts
you know,
now?
It's still getting down into the 30s. We're expected to have some spitting of snow on Thursday. We've woken up. It was a beautiful April, and we woke up to the really warm weather, and then all of a sudden we got slammed about 3 or 4 overnight snowstorms. And we had actually 86-year records this April for lows in the teens. So we're quite a bit colder than you.
Wow,
and
well,
we don't
we're,
have
we're supposed to get.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say we're supposed to get our last 2 days in this range, a 38-degree day tonight and 39 tomorrow, according to the forecast. And then from there, Our lowest is in around 54, 55 showing for the next 10 days. So I think we're past the frost. I'm hoping we are because we've got everything planted.
Very good. Well, it'll be exciting. We have long, hot, dry summers, so it'll be really exciting to compare with you that our gardening seasons. What a delight. So keep sending pictures, and as mine comes up, I'll send pictures
we'll do it.
To you. And
cool.
I was wondering if you were interested in hearing a Fra Giovanni's prayer from, I think, the 1500s or 1600s.
Say again, who it is?
Fra Giovanni.
Oh, okay. Sure. Share it with us, please.
There is nothing I can give you which you have not, but there is much, very much, that while I cannot give it, you can take. No heaven can come to us unless our hearts find rest in today. Take heaven. No peace lies in the future, which is not hidden in this present instant. Take peace. The gloom of the world is but a shadow. Behind it, yet within reach, is joy. There is a radiance and glory in the darkness. Could we but see? And to see, we have only to look. I beseech you to look. Life is so generous a giver, but we, judging its gifts by their covering, cast them away as ugly or heavy or hard. Remove the covering, and you will find beneath it a living splendor woven of love by wisdom with power. Welcome it, grasp it, and you touch the angel's hand that brings it to you. Everything we call a trial, a sorrow, or duty. Believe me, that angel's hand is there, the gift is there, and the wonder of an overshadowing presence. Our joys, too. Be not content with them as joys. They, too, conceal divine gifts. And so at this time I greet you, not quite as the world sends greetings, but with profound esteem and with a prayer that for you, now and forever, the day breaks and the shadows flee away.
Sweet. Sounds like he's had a taste of human life.
You know, I was reflecting on this. Now, I didn't come from a Catholic background, but I came from an evangelical background that was pretty close to fundamental. And for the longest time, as I left that space, I blamed it, I judged it, I rejected it, I abandoned it. And yet what I found was that within every tradition are gifts for our further growth. And I'm very grateful now for my background. I'm very grateful that I went through all these different spiritual approaches in my seeking, and that each one had jewels for me that I took with me when I left that teaching. And so I just, for those of you who come from a Catholic background, or those of you who come from a fundamental or evangelical background, or a Buddhist or any Eastern religion background, Muslim, doesn't matter, bless that. That's all I can say. Bless that. It was your rich heritage. It was the ground out of which you sprang.
For sure. And I didn't make a list of each of the words that you described what you did. You blamed it, whatever those words were. But
yeah,
there's your indicator for a next refined set of worksheets to do, that you didn't blame your fundamental religious past for what it did. You blamed your religious fundamental past because it was blaming your mind. You weren't angry at it because of it. You were angry because there was anger there. You weren't sad about it because of sadness. It was made you sad. It informs you. Whatever we want to do to something or somebody else, it informs us what's inside of us. when we have the eyes to see and the ears to hear, it's like, oh, here's my next piece of work. You know, every word we say is autobiographical. And every word, especially said in hostility or fear, is an indicator of the work we need to do.
That I think I would like to write that down. Every word we speak is every word we say is autobiographical. You have now gone down in immortality with a quote, Sir Michael.
And every word is, and go with the second half of it, and every word informs us of the next piece of work that we need to do when there's any form of hostility or fear going on.
Right. And it all, Susan was talking to Dr. Tim today about all of her issues being spokes of a wheel with one central primary issue hub. And mine is safety. And I have come to that realization. So anything I work on, if I dig deep enough, it goes down to safety. And so I thought I'd share that with you.
Right on track. And that is recognizing that and doing the work to remove those issues of safety internally is what moves us. We've talked, you know, a fair amount about being locked into the sympathetic dominant state where fight, flight, fear, and fright are the operative energies. And it's safety that heals those. When I clean up the safety, the thought disorder is based in a lack of safety in me, then I'll automatically move out of that sympathetic dominant state into a parasympathetic state where all of a sudden the energy is able to flow into me with which I thrive and which life blooms and blossoms.
Which brings me back to the pineal gland, Michael. I was doing a little more research from the scientific side of it on the pineal gland, and it was amazing how many diseases have to do with calcification of the pineal gland. And the other thing that amazed me is that in the chakra system, the pineal gland chakra, the seventh chakra, is what would it be? A motto for it or a metaphor for it would be to live in present time, live in the eternal now. And I just got
in theos.
In theos. And then I began to realize that very often where I put my hands, I'm not really aware. I just put my hand somewhere on my body, and my hands have been going to my occipital area and the top of my head, or the occipital area and my forehead. I just wanted to share that with you. The pineal gland, since it's nestled behind the pituitary, I just had this little insight. Well, if you're doing EFT or something like that, and where they tap the top of the head, well, I would imagine, for me anyway, that just putting my hand gently on the top of my head and then realizing the connection, if I have my pineal area covered with my hand and my occipital perceptive area covered with my other hand, and also the connection between the CSF, the cerebral spinal fluid pump, and breathing, and the pineal gland, because I understand the pineal gland, from what I've found, if it's all true, is more blood, more oxygen gets to the brain via the pineal gland, because it absorbs it, than any other part of the body. And I went, wow, more blood flows through there, which I interpreted as oxygenation. I just wanted to share you with you. I feel like my brain cells are a popcorn machine at the moment. I just thought I'd let you know.
That's fabulous. And it's interesting that we live in a country where a substance that specifically calcifies a pineal gland is supplied in our homes every day, in virtually every home in the country.
Chlorine and fluoride.
Chlorine and fluoride, yep. And those who aren't getting it in the water aren't getting, you know, people say, well, I wouldn't, I never drink that water. Do you shower in it?
Right.
You know, about 600 times as much chlorine is absorbed from a single 15-minute shower than the water one would drink all day. You got to filter out that chlorine
times?
In 600 times.
Oh,
a 15-minute hot shower. And, you know, some of the ways to ameliorate that is keep your shower cooler, although chlorine boils off, so to speak, at a very low temperature, relatively speaking, much lower than water. But a hot shower causes a great deal of it to become gasified, and of course you're breathing in, especially if you're in a little enclosure where all the steam is kept inside, then that chlorine is being absorbed through the skin and being breathed in. And you could drink it, you know, a regular amount of it all day, and from one single shower absorb 600 times the amount of chlorine. And, you know, it's, you can go down to the local Lowe's or Home Depot, and for as little as $16, at least take care of a significant amount of that. Now, fluoride's a different story. It's harder to take out. But it's interesting. And also, virtually every psychotropic drug has fluorine at its base.
Psychotropic, you mean like mushrooms or any of those?
No, no, psychiatric. Psychiatric drugs.
Psychiatric. Oh, I didn't know
yeah.
what psychotropic. I didn't know what that
fluoride.
Was. Good.
Yeah, fluoride is fluorine.
Well, not only that, but one of the reasons Larry and I are here is this is one of the few places in Oregon where water is neither chlorinated nor fluoridated.
How large a community is it?
It's very tiny. We're in Frontier, dear.
Oh, good, good. Well, that's a blessing because I forget exactly what the...
300 people, but the water is so pure, the state does not demand that it be chlorinated. Yeah.
Hmm.
And the local population is about to fluoride it. Fluoridate it, yeah.
Yeah, it is a choice for local population, but I think on a federal level, communities are mandated to have chlorine above a certain amount. It's a relatively small number. But anyway, that's great. Nice
yeah.
that you don't have to deal with that.
Well, it's our water is so pure that they don't chlorinate it. I mean, it's just a state that has no need to chlorinate it. It's just too pure. It has such low, it's just not an issue. Yeah, comes off the mountain.
One of our, when we were at Heartland, one of our favorite places to go and visit is Hot Springs, Arkansas. And they have this deep water geysers of hot water that come up that are just, you know, as pure can be. And there are bathhouses there, like dozens and dozens and dozens, and most of them are closed. They've been closed since the 30s. But the ones that are open, they have the, and I'm not sure whether it's state or federal, but they've mandated, like we stopped going there when they did this, they've mandated that even the water coming out of the ground for the hot baths has to be chlorinated. It's like, are you kidding me?
It's
but
the
that,
bottom line. The chloride.
Bizarre.
Yeah, the chloride is a cast-off, I think, from the mining industry or something. I'm not sure. Same with fluoride. So they sell it. Yeah.
Well, the chlorine actually started out in World War I, and it was a gas that was made to kill people.
Right.
And it became a very large industry because of the killing machine that it became. And so they went around and looked once the war was over, how are we going to keep making our money? Oh, let's tell them how good it's going to be if we put it in their water for them.
Right.
That's where the chlorine industry came from. It's still killing people, still doing its job.
Well, it's the same with chlorine, right?
Well, now, actually, most fluoridated water, they don't use fluorine anymore. They use hydrofluoric sulfuric acid. That's a waste product of the fertilizer industry because that's such a huge, huge industry. And the waste is so expensive to get rid of that they sell it to communities now to fluoridate their water.
Bottom line,
pretty crazy. Pretty crazy.
Yeah. When we're not in Rothman, Cuba, we're, yeah, it's all about me.
Well, congratulations on doing your work and moving forward, and delight to hear what's happening in your world.
And maybe Jeannie can put that infamous quote by Dr. Michael Rice on. Maybe she can put that down in the notes, because that's a great one.
We'll do it.
Sweet.
We're co-conspirators.
There you go. Well, any other thoughts for you, young lady?
I think that will do it for today, Michael and Jeannie. You take care. An Easter spring garden joy card is coming your way.
Cool. All right. Well, have a blessed one.
Okay. Talk to you later.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right. Well, Miss Jeannie, do we have anything else happening in the chat room or anybody in the phone queue with a hand up?
No, nothing else. I would just add, we had a self-made hoop house or whatever, just with some cattle panels and some plastic, and we have harvested kale and chard and lettuce and mint and parsley all winter, and it's still just rocking. It's just amazing, and it was just, self-made little area. And hopefully we can cover our back garden so that next year we'll have three times the amount of space to continue growing.
For sure. I mean, the kale that's coming out of the garden still now from our winter crop is, it's almost black. It's so loaded with nutrition. It's just awesome. And it was a simple little, it's about a 12 by 8 space, just for information's sake, if you're interested in growing something and having something that carries on year round. About a 12 by 8 space, and I think it probably cost us about $350 for hog panels or cattle panels, steel fencing that they used to fence cattle in. We just took it in 8-foot pieces, stood it up on end, folded over this 8-foot space so there's plenty of room for us, 6 feet to walk in it. We tied it together with just plastic tie straps, put garden plastic over it, and used clamps, large hand clamps, to just clamp it down so we can take it apart, take the plastic off in about 4 minutes. And we had a garden space all winter. We did put a 55-gallon drum filled with water and put a heat band on it, so that on really cold nights that would radiate some heat into the garden so we didn't lose everything. So we had to add that heat source. And so we encourage you to put it to work in your life along with every other tool, and have the best year yet of your eternal life. If this work is benefiting you, then we invite you to consider donating to support us at the level of benefit it is to you. Create that level of support in whatever way you can. Project you can take on, financial support, whatever it takes. All we're about is taking this to every mind, heart, and being on the planet, and everything that comes to support that beyond a simple lifestyle is where the money goes, is to make that happen. Appreciate you. Blessings. Have a good day. Bye-bye.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to Living Pure Love in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mindshifters Radio.